I know that that person has had liposuction with a fat transfer to their butt. And they're like, these are the way I do my squats. And like, oh my God, like, it's so obvious to me that you have had your butt done.
Benson, welcome to another episode of Too Tired to Be Crazy with me on every Thursday. Today, I have a returning guest. She's been on here before and we talked about, is my vagina normal?
Dr. I'm traumatized. Don't remind me.
Dr. Sheila Nazarian.
Perfect. You can call me whatever you want, Violet.
Sheila. Well, Dr. Nazarian, she is right now one of the most popular sat out surgeons, plastic surgeons out there right now. And you recently just came out with a Netflix show called Skin Decision Before and After, which, by the way, if you guys have not seen it, you totally should check it out. It will make you cry. The first episode has made everyone cry. She told me it was going to make me cry, and I was like, nah, I'm good. And then I cried.
It's so. It's not your typical plastic surgery show. It's basically showing what we actually do as plastic surgeons and how we affect people's lives in such a huge, dramatic way, rather than kind of like making a spectacle of the patients,
I mean,
I think most shows do.
Yeah. I mean, the first episode, and I'll just say really quickly, was just basically this one girl, she was shot by her, was it boyfriend or husband?
Husband.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she had all this scarring on her body, and also...
He shot her kids too and himself, and basically she's the only one in the family that survived.
So then she basically, not only was she so traumatized from that whole experience, every day when she would look at her body, she was reminded of the gun wounds of like what happened in her life. And Dr. Nazarian was kind enough to completely reconstruct her body and to take care of those bullet wounds
and scarring, and she had like a scar straight down her abdomen. They had basically had to open her up to control the bleeding.
Yeah. So I would say it's really tasteful. It's not like scary to watch. And also it's very heartfelt because you get to see cases of people that actually need this work because they went through something in their life, or it's for their self-esteem. But it's not just your typical plastic surgery show where it's just like, I don't know, I just like want my lips to be bigger. Can you make me a Jenner?
No, we actually like nixed all those people during casting. But it's funny you say that because in Brazil and South America, the show is actually called Self-Esteem Surgery.
Oh my God.
So yeah, they translate. It's in 190 countries.
Your show?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Languages. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
So have you been really busy after that show?
We've been getting anywhere between 250 and 500 inquiries a day. So we're actually completely overwhelmed. Thankful, good problem to have, but we're definitely looking to like other, like recruiting other types of businesses, like a call center or something like that, just to help return all the inquiries.
How long did you guys shoot for?
It was like August through, I want to say October, November.
August through October. Okay.
Yeah, last year. So it's kind of good too because we got it done before all this crazy COVID happened.
So wait. Okay. So would you say then with plastic surgery inquiries, aside from having a Netflix show, which obviously brought in more inquiries, would you say the work has slowed down or actually it got busier? Because I feel like people think it would slow down, but I feel like us living in LA, more people are like, oh great, no one's gonna see me, so I can actually get some work done on the DL.
Yeah, we have been getting a huge amount of especially lower face inquiries, like neck liposuction, chins, like buccal fat pad removal, because people are zooming and their computers are on their desks, so the camera's looking up at them.
Oh my God.
So they're seeing what their neck looks like. And that, and also right now, like you can get a total lower facelift and wear a mask and go outside and nobody would know you had anything done.
That's so true.
The other thing too is I do so many awake procedures, including like the lipo of the neck and chin. I would totally just do that half an hour awake in my office. So a lot of people are afraid of going to sleep. It's like a control issue. So I will actually do any procedure that I can possibly do awake. A, it's lower risk. B, it's a money savings because you're not paying for the operating room and anesthesia costs. And then C, you literally like walk in, get it done and walk out. So,
yeah.
And it's like permanently done and you're over it. Like, and I always tell people if there's something that you think about more than four times a week and it's safe to get it done, just get it done, dude. Life's too short.
What are your thoughts on the current beauty standards?
I mean, I mean, I think they're, it's very interesting because I think all over the world, beauty standards are very different, right? Mm-hmm. I just think my whole thing is to sort of look at your proportions, your natural God-given proportions, and stay true to those and, you know, try to just make yourself optimize for you, but not try to make yourself look like a whole different body or a whole different person. Because the truth is trends change. Like, look at what we were just talking about. In the 90s, it was like small butt, big boobs.
Like now Pamela Anderson. It's big boobs,
small butts. Like I literally have patients in my practice that 20 years ago got lipo of their butt and now they're coming in to put fat in their butt. And I'm like, dude, you shouldn't be like going under the knife every like 5 to 10 years as the trends change. Our bodies aren't clothing. Like you can't just like donate it and go buy more.
Yeah.
So I just try to like not pay too much attention to trends and just make people look optimized for their own proportions and their own body type.
That's good. Do you feel like the beauty standards these days are almost unrealistic to the point that because of Photoshop and the filters, even the girls who get all this work done, they still Photoshop and they still filter. So even they don't believe their own like beauty, and that's why they constantly need more. So
that's like 100% rampant. And what pisses me off the most, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about this, are especially like the fitness accounts where I know that that person has had liposuction with a fat transfer to their butt. And they're like, these are the way I do my squats. And like, I'm like, oh my God, like it's so obvious to me that you have had your butt done, but you know, your millions of followers are just like slaving away, feeling like crap because they are doing like 2,000 squats a day and their butt's never going to look like that because that's not real.
Okay. That was actually going to be my question. If you can just look at a lot of these people on social media and know right away what kind of work they have done.
Yeah. And they all have work done, by the way.
I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew it.
And also like not just that, like celebrities too. There was an article that came out, I think it was in New York Times. I think it was like 5 years ago or something, where it actually looked at how much these A-list celebrities spend on plastic surgery. Thanks. Yeah. On plastic surgery every month. Guess how much like the A-list people spend on like beauty, facials, injectables, surgery.
Every month?
Every month.
5,000?
30,000.
Every month?
Every month. So it's like, but that's their job, right? Their job is to look flawless and beautiful. So whether they're getting like hot springs or whether they're getting surgery or whether they're getting injectables or tightening procedures or collagen inducing procedures. So the other thing is like, even before there was this whole social media thing, we would look at celebrities and be like, oh my God, her hair is so flawless, you know, great. Yeah. And her skin is so flawless. But how do we, like, it's not our job to look good. Like, we actually have jobs. So yeah. We don't have the time or the money to go spend that much money optimizing ourselves every single day.
But the problem is that before, when you look at celebrities, you knew it was unattainable because celebrities were so far away. And now with social media, Instagram influencers or celebrities on social media in general, it feels more unattainable. Like, oh, I can actually look like that because they seem like regular people now. Right. So would you say then it made our beauty standards a little bit worse?
I think it brings it closer to home, and plastic surgery doesn't seem so unattainable anymore. I feel like everybody can sort of get financing or, you know, get their butt done or get a tummy tuck these days. So it's not, plastic surgery and like those procedures are not something that's so far away and only for the A-listers or only for celebrities or the super rich. I feel like everyone can get that done now. And then seeing these girls with their bodies posing in just like workout clothes or like on the sidewalk with their, you know, their legs sticking out, they look like girl next door. And so I think it, you know, that beauty standard isn't so far away, like you said. It's yeah. just like, she looks like me, or I could have been on Melrose on that sidewalk.
But I think as long as people are honest though about getting work done, or at they're least not. Some stuff, at least people can be honest about like a little bit, like even mm-hmm. a little bit, I think yeah. would make them feel better because yeah, like if I'm looking at the fitness models and they all have their butts done and getting lipo certain places, I'm just like, okay, then apparently if I do 100 squats today, I'm not going to have a big ass tomorrow.
Right.
I was lied to. Like, it would be good to know, but obviously it's their job, so they're not going to tell you. But I'll tell you guys right now, I mean, every model you've ever liked, most models have gone lipo, like, in their thighs, between their legs. Yeah. They have
lower back, like the, you know, love handles.
Yeah, it's actually very common. Like, every single Victoria's Secret model you've ever liked has had lipo all over her body. It's very normal.
I'm not going to say yay or nay, obviously, but
it's the truth. Yeah. I know for a fact because I have a lot of my friends are models and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So I'm like, a lot of my friends also got their vaginas done with Dr. Nazarian, which is so funny. Like, I feel like one day I definitely want to get mine done. Even though she says mine is perfect, I wouldn't mind still. I don't know, for my own self-esteem.
You're it's so weird. Funny. Yeah, I just, I didn't know I would go to, like, plastic surgery residency and become an OBGYN, but...
So what does beauty look like in the eye of a plastic surgeon?
I mean, I think like it's very different, right? So one of the reasons why I've been super, you know, different and sort of successful, even in Beverly Hills, which is like there's 31 plastic surgeons in my building. So wow. Even it's a prestigious building, and I think I'm probably like one of the only women and the youngest person there. But I think that the reason why I've sort of gotten to that point is I decided very early on that I'm not everyone's doctor. I'm only the doctor for people who want natural results, who nobody's going to know you had anything done. And not only am I going to do that to other people, but I'm going to do that to myself. So I'll never be overfilled, even though I have 5 syringes of filler in my face and I like haven't moved my forehead in 12 years. like I just knew like I don't want to be everyone's doctor. I want to be the doctor of the people that have like, you know, are normal.
No, but it's really cool. Like you literally do it on yourself too, which I think makes it more of a relief. Cause I feel like a lot of doctors, they put these syringes in people's faces, but then they don't touch themselves. So like you literally sometimes before an appointment, or you've talked about it before where you just like, oh, I just put like, and you videotape it sometimes for your Instagram too, where you put fillers in your own face by yourself in front of the mirror.
Well, the reason why I started doing that is cause like, you know, I'm Persian and a Persian Jew, and like the Persian Jewish community is first generation. Like I escaped from Iran when I was 6 years old to come to this country on the back of a pickup truck through the desert. So the Persian community is very much first generation, very conservative. And I remember when I first started practice, they'd be like, oh my God, I heard one woman got Botox and then she ended up in the ICU and her whole body was paralyzed. And you laugh, but I'm not joking.
Oh, yeah.
So I actually started injecting myself on Instagram just to show the Persians who were following me that you're not going to die. And it's, you're not, and like there's stuff going on, like it's snake poison. Like no, Botox is actually from honey. That's why you can't give babies honey. Yeah. Because they get botulism. So it's not snake poison. It's literally in honey. So there's all these like rumors and like craziness that like some grandma told all the Persians or something. I don't know. But I literally just started injecting my own face so people see that I'm not dead.
Yeah.
And also you don't have to look fake. And it's actually safe. Because if it wasn't, why would I shoot myself up with it?
Which is really cool because, to be honest, I still, because I'm more new to this stuff, I still have a hard time understanding even like what is one syringe or all those different terms. So then when you say like, oh, I have 5 syringes in my face, it's hard for me to understand. But when I think 5, it just sounds like, it sounds like it would be a lot. But then I look at your face and you're so naturally looking like.
5 syringes is 5 mL, which is actually a teaspoon.
Okay, so you see, that's interesting to know. I had no idea.
So a teaspoon smeared all over my face is not going to make you look unnatural unless I just shoved it all in your cheeks or something like that, you know?
Right. No, you look super, I wouldn't even guess you had anything in your
face. And that's the other thing, too, is people are so scared of looking unnatural because when you're walking down the street, especially in LA, you only notice the people that look crazy. You don't notice the people that look normal and you think, oh, how lucky they are that they just look that way. But really, it's just good upkeep and maintenance.
I think it's really important to have a surgeon that you can trust like this, because I do know other girls in LA or have friends where they go to some of these popular famous surgeons and they allow them to continuously put all these fillers in their face. And although on social media it may look good, a lot of these girls, when you see them in real life, it's actually a little alarming or scary because their lip doesn't look right. You can see the filler in their lip, or there's too much cheek filler, whatever it is. Like it looks really crazy and scary and weird in real life. And I think that's why it's important to have somebody that can be like, hey, thank you so much. Like I would love to take more of your money, but like, let's also slow down. Your face is looking like
I've
a cat lady.
I've actually had like super famous influencers come into my office with like massive lips that somebody else did. And they came to me for like the tear trough filler that I just posted about. And I will actually say, I can't touch you until we dissolve what's in your lip. Because if I do that and you post that on your social media and I do some other area, they're going to think I did your lips too. And that's actually going to backfire on what I'm known for. So, and actually I've said that to one, and she was working with L'Oreal. And actually after that rumor got out that I actually told this influencer, like, I can't inject here because this looks so crazy.
Yeah.
Like all of like the people from L'Oreal started coming because they're like, oh my God, that's amazing.
No, I love when it's, when it's more honest. So then what are your thoughts on people, since now with social media, everything seems so much easier to go get down, like, oh, everyone, it's normalized. So then what are your thoughts on people who then can't afford the expensive stuff, but they mm-hmm. want to look like a Kylie Jenner. So then they go and they try to get it like a deal, like, oh, I saw on Google, like it's 50% off right now if I go get it there, or like maybe I go to a different country.
Yeah.
So
I just, it's funny. My social media person who helps me, she's 22 years old and she's been with me now for like a year. And she's like, Dr. Nazarian, if I've learned anything working with you is that you don't want to cheap out on your body and your health. And it's so true. And I'll tell you, you get what you pay for. And you'll end up actually spending more money getting stuff fixed. I mean, you might get lucky, but it's kind of like playing Russian roulette with your health and your yeah. face and your body. So
I just feel like, okay, you want to get a discount on clothes. Yeah. Discount on food. Sure. Discount on plastic surgery. I feel like no.
No.
Like you save up for that. Like if someone told me I can spend either $3,000 on getting a small procedure done or fillers or whatever, or I can get it for $500, I would save up for $3,000. This reminds me of a good example of one time when I cheaped out on my transmission on my car. Mm-hmm. I could have paid either $1,000 for my transmission or from this like Armenian mechanic that did it to me for $500.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm Russian. He speaks Russian. Like, you know. Yeah. He gets me. I fixed my transmission in the car for $500. I saved $500. In the luckily, that one day, I was always driving on the freeway. And for whatever reason, I had this weird voice in my head. And it was like, get off the freeway. Take Laurel Canyon. Take a hill. And I've never taken Laurel Canyon before. And for whatever reason, I got off the freeway in that moment for the first time ever. And I started driving up a hill to Laurel Canyon. My transmission broke down and started going backwards.
Oh, my God.
So I started going backwards in the hill. And I had to, like, tried to park into somebody's home really quick while the ass of my car was still out because it was going backwards because my transmission was broken.
Oh my God, so scary.
Had I stayed on the freeway, I would 100% died, which is one of the reasons I believe in God and there's a higher power.
No, you know what's so crazy? Like shit like that happens to me all the freaking time. I'll give you like a couple examples. One time there was a tree kind of on my way to my house, like literally like 1,000 feet away from my house, and I was driving up to it, and I just had a premonition the tree was gonna fall. I literally slowed down and the tree went boom and I braked, and my son was with me. We both like held hands. That's one. Two, one time I was going over Benedict Canyon and there was so much traffic, you knew like a car accident yeah. happened because it's like one way this way, one way that way. And I just in my head I saw a totaled red Porsche, and then 20 minutes later on the tow truck was a total cherry red Porsche.
That's crazy.
One last one, which is totally like crazy. And I know you'll appreciate this. When I met my husband, it's kind of crazy because literally I met his parents a week later. He met my dad a week after that. We were engaged in 3 months. And when I first moved into like his condo, you know how like you have a PIN code for everything and it's always the same thing?
Yes.
Like maybe it's like 2542. His parking spot was 4225. Like in the building, it was a 4-digit code that was, that was the flip exact, like instead of it being like 2245, it was 4522. Like he was my yin to my yang. Like shit like that happens to me all
the
time.
Wait, what does that mean? It was 40.
Like the parking spot number could have been anything.
Yeah.
It was basically my PIN code.
Oh, it was your PIN code.
Which
okay,
is
I
like
missed that.
The thing that
oh, and that's how you were like, he's the one?
Well, I knew he was the one, but like, it's almost like these things in life that sort of say like you're doing the right thing, you're going the right way. Yes, yes, yes.
But no, I agree with you. Like I've had one time I've never met my grandfather. I never had a grandfather. So like one of them was still alive and then I never met him, but like I had a weird dream that he died. And then I woke up and I was a child and I woke up that morning and I suddenly saw my parents being sad and I was like, Mom, what's wrong? And she goes, my father just passed away. And I was like, whoa.
I just got the chills.
Isn't that so crazy when you just dream about it or you have a premonition then it actually happens?
Yeah, like when my mom passed away too, my son, when he was 2 years old, he was in the back of my car. He just like started talking and he told me he dreamt that my mom came and was congratulating my cousin for getting married. And my cousin just got engaged.
Okay.
It was like and my son was 2 years old and he'd never met my mom, obviously, because she passed away when I was 16. But he basically and my mom was very close with this cousin because his mom had passed away when he was young. So my mom was like his surrogate mom. Just like crazy stuff that I'm just like, there's got to be something greater than this.
Yeah. No, I think so too. Or sometimes they say that sometimes we have weird memories as kids. Like I have some weird memories as a child that never happened to me and I can't figure out where it's from. And I was like, did I imagine it? Mm-hmm. But sometimes they say it's from like a different past lifetime, a different life that you suddenly somehow remember.
Crazy.
I know. Anyway, moving back to plastic surgery.
Violet and I share very similar, I think, like spiritual.
Yeah.
Slash God.
Which we'll get into, by the way, because we're both Jewish and we're both immigrants. So mm-hmm. I feel like we do, and we both believe in God, which I think is really beautiful. I know not everyone does, and that's okay too, but I think it's nice to believe in something. Yeah. So. Hey guys, quickly taking away from this podcast episode to let you know about this product that I've been recently using. A lot of you guys have been asking me what I take to help me fall asleep, help my nights easier, and then help me wake up with no grogginess and just completely start my day like a psycho at 6 a.m. and work out and clean my whole house. Well, the product that I've been using a lot recently has been Helis, which is this 100% natural, vegan, and clean ingredient CBD-based brand that actually works. And the reason I love it so much because there's no THC, so they will not get you high. And all their products have been triple lab tested for potency and purity. And the coolest thing about it is, so not only does it help you with your sleep, it can also help you with anxiety. So right now, for a limited time, Helis is offering a trial size of their best-selling common sleep drops for free. I use their sleep drops. They're amazing. Trust me. So it will last between 5 to 10 days, depending on your personal dosage. So head over to helisnaturals.com/violet to sign up and get your free sample today. That's helisnaturals.com/violet. Anyway, moving on, I wanted to ask you just like some quick medical questions. I feel like a lot of my followers had questions about, so we can just like, you know, bang them out.
Okay, go for it.
What is the one procedure people come to the most?
I would say it's a tie between labiaplasty, buccal fat pad removal, and small breast augmentation.
Okay, but at one point you were known for the vagina doctor because a lot of my friends went to you, so it's pretty crazy.
I do a lot of vaginas.
You do a lot of it. And one thing about vaginas, we'll just get into it, is that the girls are awake mm-hmm. and it's like in and out. And then the healing process is just a couple of weeks to just not to have sex. But
well, I actually won't let you have sex for 4 weeks and no tampon. I basically say nothing goes in and nothing goes out. And I tell them, pretend your vagina's mine for a month on loan and then I'll give it back to you. So take good care of it.
Yeah, you just said one of my friends and she told me she didn't have sex for 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. But like the pain wasn't, there wasn't like pain or anything.
Yeah, it's actually not bad. I always tell people you've probably skinned your knee worse than this because the incisions are like super small. And you don't feel anything during the whole thing, even though you're awake. I'm like the queen of no pain.
Okay, so if somebody has fat removed through lipo, does it reappear again?
Okay, so this question drives me bonkers. Okay, so okay, this is how I want you to think about your fat cells. Think, you know those storage units that you purchase or you rent out to store your furniture?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, imagine a fat cell is one of those storage units and you are born with a certain number of storage units on your body. You don't gain any more and you don't lose any. They just expand and they shrink as you put more furniture in them. Okay, so eat a lot of cake, you're gonna expand your storage units. Diet and exercise, you're gonna shrink your storage units, but you have the same available storage units. So let's say for women, for example,
okay.
we're born with more storage units in our thighs than men.
Okay.
Men are born with more storage units in their stomach. So let's say a guy comes in and I lipo his stomach. I've removed those rent-a-storage units permanently. So if he goes and gains 50 pounds, he's going to stuff that furniture into the different
other
storage units that remain. Right. So it's not like fat has legs and it's going to walk around and go to a different place on your body. No, we're born with a certain number of storage units in our body. Some areas might have more storage units than others. When I permanently remove those storage units through lipo, if you continue to gain weight and not lead like a healthy lifestyle,
it'll be in the other storage units.
Yeah,
your body.
It's going to go to your arm, in the storage units in your arms, or it's going to go in the storage units in your ankle, whatever.
So that's why they say, that's why like if you ever Google about lipo, they say like make sure this is not for weight loss. This is just for an area you can't get rid of. And then make sure you have a healthy diet after you get lipo because it's not like a fat preventative or whatever.
No, it's not. If you're just going to, you know, so a lot of these people, I'll give you an example. Some of these people who shall go unnamed, who have moved all of their fat into their butt, sometimes their butt looks crazy, huge, and sometimes it looks really nice and normal. It's because they moved all the storage units to their butt. And so if they gain 20 pounds, their butt's going to look insane. And if they lose 30 pounds, it's going to look nice and cute and round and shapely.
Got it. So basically, if you get lipo on your stomach, you may not get fat there again, but you'll probably, the fat is suddenly going to start coming to your arms or your legs or your ass.
Well, the fat
whatever.
Was already there. Those storage units, you were born with them there, but you're going to expand those if you don't eat healthy and start gaining a bunch of weight.
Got it. Okay. So speaking of butts, how do girls get their butts done?
So there's three different ways. I actually went on The Real for this and I like had like props and stuff, but you can do butt implants, which I think are gross. And I can always tell them from a mile away. Literally, it's like really sad. I don't like them at all. So I don't do them because I just don't think that looks good. The other way is to actually do lipo and then take those live fat cells and inject them into your butt, which is a surgery I do all the time. Sometimes it's referred to as Brazilian butt lift or fat transfer to the butt. But it's kind of nice because you're getting a twofer. So it's like you're sucking it out of the areas you don't want it. And you can put it in your breasts, which is actually safe. And I do that a lot too. Or you can put it in your butt. Those are the two most common places. And actually in men, I can stick it in their pec muscle, you know, make them look like they have a bigger pec or make them look like they have bigger biceps. Or even calf muscles. So that's fat transfer, which I think is fantastic. And then the other way, which is a lot more expensive than surgery, believe it or not, is to actually take off the shelf products that build your own collagen and fat and inject it into your butt or your breasts. So usually that's done more in the butt, but it's expensive because I have to purchase the product from a third party, which charges us a crap ton of money. And it's not just your own fat that I'm using.
Oh, so it's injections, it's but an it's injectable. It's not your own fat. It's something else.
What happens is when it's injected, it builds your own collagen and fat. So it's actually long lasting. So it's really good for example, let's say it's someone who exercises a lot. They have no fat and they also have no butt.
Oh.
So they don't have fat to donate from one area to their butt. They literally Got are it. Like six pack. But flat booty.
Oh, so I have a friend that's really skinny and then she got her, you know which friend I'm talking about, right? And she got her butt done the first time and it was fat transfer. She actually gained some weight in order to be able to put in her butt. And now she redid it, but she did it with butt implants, I think.
Yeah.
Because obviously her fat is burning out.
So this is the other thing that I want to put out there. You can gain weight for a fat transfer. So let's say you put on 10 pounds. Now you all of a sudden have all this fat that I can liposuction and put in your butt. I always tell people fat's stupid. It doesn't know if it's in your stomach or in your butt. So then if you're like, oh crap, I feel like I'm heavy and you go lose the weight, those storage units you just moved to your butt are going to shrink.
Yeah.
So there's no point in gaining weight for a fat transfer.
Because then she continues.
Unless you're going to stay at that gained weight.
Because you're right. Because then she continues to eat the way she does or she doesn't eat or whatever she does. Then again, she's going to end up losing the fat that she had in her butt.
Right. And if she wants to, you know, then she'd have to gain the weight back in order to grow her booty.
So she's the type of candidate that would be perfect then for your third option.
Right.
And not
the injectables.
Because she tried butt implants and like it was really scary. Like we had to take her to the ER and it was like it kept ripping. Her butthole was like literally ripping apart.
It's
it
not
was
her
like
butthole, but we
I don't know what it
the incisions made near like it's near the crease of the butt. And it is a higher
blood
than
average
out. Infection rate. And again, like I said, I'm not starving, I'm not hungry, I'm very well fed. I don't need to be doing every single surgery and I like to sleep well at night. So I'm not going to offer a surgery that I don't think A, looks good or natural, and B, has a high risk compared to all the other things that I do.
Yeah, and like me and my friends are close friends. We were taking care of her, so we would need to like clean that area down there. And it was like the first time I was like near her vagina so many times because I was like cleaning the blood that was seeping from her butthole. And it was actually scary. I was really scared for her.
You guys go get you some friends that will take care of your butt implants.
Yeah, I'm such a good friend.
I'm like, I have no good friends.
I'm so fascinated with this stuff that I was like, yeah, I'll do it. I just want to see what it looks like. It was really interesting. What would you say a good candidate is for a vaginoplasty.
So labiaplasty. I would say usually, you know, it's either with pain or no pain. Some people say when they're riding a bike, it hurts, or when they have tight jeans on, it's not comfortable. A lot of other people are just like, I don't like the stuff that hangs out, and I just want things to be like Marie Kondo'd, like tidied up down there. Tuck. And I just do like a very simple aesthetic procedure awake under local anesthesia. And a lot of times I have to like talk girls down too, because I feel like whether they've had it done by somebody else and they don't like the way that it looks, or some boyfriend at some point said something, I'm never going to do something that's like you know, so crazy that like, I'm going to risk your sensation, or now a penis can't fit, or like I've taken away the functional aspect of that area. I always tell people you're not paper mache or cardboard that I can cut it up and like make it look like, you know, whatever. I have to respect blood supply and I have to make sure a penis fits and I have to make sure that you have sensation and that you have a very long, glorious vagina life that you can enjoy.
Right. Yeah. Cause I feel like you've had people that come to you and they want like a lot removed from their lips and you're just like, no, I can't.
No, because it's like going to the supermarket hungry. Like you end up buying more food.
Yeah.
You know, same with breast reduction. People are like, make them an A. And I'm like, then you're going to look like a pair because you actually have hips. So it's up to me to be like, I hear you, but I'm actually going to give you what you like need, not necessarily.
No, you've been great, because even when I showed you my 22 pictures of my vagina and I was like wanting to get it done, and then you're just like, you don't need it. And I thought that was really nice of you to say that. I mean, I still maybe in the future will consider getting it done, I don't know, but
I mean, I've definitely done, you know, yeah, like a few Playboy models and stuff who, you know, that's are like, I've done a couple pornography industry people, and it's so funny because they're actually coming to me because they want natural results and they don't want anybody while they're filming to know that they've had anything done, which is kind of cool. And for them it is like, it's their job and it's their career and it has to be, you know, better than perfect. But for the normal person, you know, coming in, whether it's Violet or a soccer mom or something like that, like I will be the guide and be like, okay, you're not actually like paying your bills by how this area looks, and it's good, you know, it's like 90% there. Yeah. That 10% might, you know, matter for somebody who's showing off their vagina all the time.
Right.
But not for like the average.
No, my friend that just got it done with you, she's engaged. So it's like, it was literally, she got it done for her. Like mm-hmm. for me, it doesn't bother me my vagina, how it looks when I stand, because mm-hmm. it's not really there. It bothers me the thought of like when I open my legs open, just the thought of it just opening up. So like, what is.
That's normal though.
I know. Apparently it's normal. What does a normal vagina look like?
That's so funny. So, I mean, I think it varies. It's like saying, what does a normal breast look like? Like or mine. What is a normal.
I'm kidding. That's a perfect.
Or like, what
breast.
Does a normal nose look like? You know, that's why you're I right. think like everybody's different. And for me, it's just to make it look within the realm of normal, within normal limits, we call it.
Yeah.
And not listen to you and be like, okay, cut here. And I'm like, no, actually, your nerves are there. Like, how would the person know that? They wouldn't. So they're coming to me as an expert to guide them through the whole thing.
Right. So for me, I think it's more of a self-esteem issue that I should work on. So I'll figure that out. Anyway, okay. What's one trendy procedure you believe is actually a big waste of money and time?
Big trendy procedure that's a waste of money. Oh my God.
Hey, Bella.
No. The freaking thing they're doing right now.
Oh yeah, that's
to
important.
To like lift the eyebrow and make you look like a Star Trek character.
Okay, so if you're not seeing the video from this, is she's basically talking about how a lot of models lift their eyebrows, but then also do their eyes slanted.
Yeah, that I'm gonna have no part to do with that because I think that's a trend. But I'm actually like, there's another trend that people are putting threads. So like a regular female eyebrow should go up and then like, you know, kind of like straight out. They're mm-hmm. actually making it like a line like this. Like, you know how you would
I've
draw
been
like
seeing
a
ma- that.
Like, let's say I told you draw a circle face and make it angry. Like you would draw the eyebrows like this.
Facing up, right, left.
Yeah, like that's how they're making their eyebrows look. And then the places that are doing it are actually posting that on Instagram, like picture after picture after picture.
I have friends.
Like, I'm so proud of this result.
I have friends that got threads in their eyebrows who also went, I mean, in their face, like on the sides, which mm-hmm. is like, it's like a tiny little facelift or something. And they're like early 20s and they also went to other countries to get it done.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of the barbed threads. I don't mind the smooth threads that just build collagen, but
that mean to get a thread there?
So barbed threads are, imagine a suture that we would use in surgery and they've laser cut it to have little barbs. So what they do is they do this, they put it in and then they like pull your skin up over it and it sort of holds it up in that location.
So there's actually something like
thread underneath the skin.
Like a thread. Okay. Inside the skin and it just pulls up. And then how long does that last for?
So they say it lasts a year. It doesn't last a year. It like is like maximum 3 to 6 months. And then the patients come back angry about how it didn't last a whole year, asking for more threads.
So someone who obviously has this done, a good example is going to be Bella Hadid.
Well, I don't know like what she's had done or what these people do, but I'll tell you it's higher risk. There's much better technology out there. And that's another problem I feel like with social media and beauty procedures is everybody's going to tout the thing that every, like the practitioners themselves can afford. Yeah. So not every, like I have 25 lasers, probably have over $3 million in lasers in my practice. Not every practitioner is going to be able to afford every single freaking laser or technology that comes out. Yeah. So what they can afford is microneedling pens. They can afford threading. They can afford Botox and they can afford filler. So every single practitioner and their mother, whether they're a nurse or an esthetician or a family doctor that all of a sudden now is doing Botox or dentist, they're all going to say, everyone needs microneedling. Everyone needs threads. Everyone needs, Botox and filler because they can get their hands on it very easily. The cost for them to acquire it is really low. So that's why I always say, like, you should go to, if you're really serious about this, you should go to a doctor that does it all. You have surgery on the table. You have super expensive lasers on the table. You have the threads, you have the fillers, and you have the Botox. And
they're not offering it just because it's the only thing they currently can get their hands on. And that's the other thing too,
exactly. Like a lot of doctors only have one laser. So guess what you're getting when you go there? No matter if you're white, dark skinned, you're all getting the same thing because all they have is a hammer. So to, everyone's a nail.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. So that's one that you think is trendy and is a waste of money. So that's good to know. So you're seeing all these, but I feel like I'm starting to feel like that trend was super popular with making your eyes super slanted, which I guess in some ways a little racist, but whatever. And I feel like I've been noticing that trend slowly has been going away. I do still see the eyebrow lift and the angry eyebrow lift and still the threading, but I feel like it's becoming less and less popular because I'm noticing people are Photoshopping their eyes less slanted than they used to.
Oh, interesting. I still get people like calling in for that. And I'm like, sorry, we don't do that.
So last question, surgery stuff is my question is, being a plastic surgeon and then understanding all the beauty standards, constantly fixing all these other people, does it ever make you feel insecure about yourself? Because you seem really confident. So
I'm super confident, but I think there's definitely some stuff that I'd want to do. And if I could honestly reach, I would have done it already to myself. So like my like love handles on Middle Easterners is like a thing. So it doesn't matter how much skinnier I get, I'm never going to lose these love handles. So if I could have lipoed them myself, like reached, I would have done it already, but
you won't go to other doctors.
I mean, I would, but it's like finding the time. Like sometimes I'll go 6 months without even Botoxing myself and I'm never more than 4 feet away from it. Yeah. But it's like, I literally just don't have the time cause I'm taking care of everybody else.
So how do you not get too hard on yourself if you're constantly fixing everyone else's faces or making them like the beauty standard of right now? Like how do you go home and like look in the mirror and feel still beautiful?
Because my jewelry is my education. Like my beauty to me is my education and how hard I've worked and what I've accomplished in my life. I feel like a lot of times, which is sad to say, a lot of people, all the things that they've gotten in their life is because of the way they looked. I was completely opposite. I was super like anorexic looking skinny. I was hairy. I was brown and dark skinned in a school full of lighter skinned people. So I was never popular. I didn't even date till medical school. So it was like, I was just a nerd and my self-confidence came from grades, what I was studying and the schools I got into and getting awards. So I never associated my self-worth
with how you look.
Beauty and how I looked.
Got it. That makes so much sense. And that's really good though. I feel like, yeah.
I think it's much healthier and I tried to instill that in my kids too.
Exactly. So then if you ever do get any work done, it's more like just for yourself or you just think it's time. Even like for me, when I finally decided to so basically Dr. Nazarian, if you didn't listen to one of my old episodes, is that she put like Botox over my lip and then a little bit of filler on the top of my lip in order to help with my gummy smile. So it's like, for me, it just bothered me when I smiled, but it wouldn't take away whether or not I was beautiful or not.
No, and also a lot of the times, like, if you take away someone's insecurity of smiling.
Yeah.
Like, I've had people tell me, I don't even want to smile because it shows my entire teeth and all my gums. And you give them that gift of allowing them to smile without a thought.
Yeah.
Like that's a beautiful thing.
Well, I've always, if you guys listen to one of my other episodes, I was born with a birth defect. I literally talked about my whole life. I struggled with being born with really bad teeth, like having no enamel. So I've had veneer since I was 5. So I think subconsciously my mouth is probably that one area that I need to perfect it. So then when I finally got perfect teeth and then I still, when I smile, it's a little gummy. I'm just like, are you kidding me? So I think, like, for me, it was necessary. But yeah, like, I agree with you. I think that's a good way to look at it, as well as you love yourself. So when you get work done, is because you're like, oh, I just need to fix this, versus being like,
I will be happy if I don't.
Yeah. Like, I will not be happy and no one's going to love me unless I fix my gummy smile. Like, that was not my thought process. It was more like, oh, I just want to have a nicer smile for me.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good way to look at it. And then, okay, so speaking of being brown, I don't know if that's like the good segment. Speaking of being not white. So one thing that we can relate is that we're both Jewish. We're both immigrants. You're Persian. I'm Israeli. I'm Russian-Israeli, so obviously a little different. But I always love hearing stories because I feel like people don't understand how immigrant stories are always so different from anyone that was even born in the States, even first generation. Mm-hmm. So, like, I feel like people sometimes don't realize about how crazy immigrant stories are. And, like, so you're from originally from Iran. Mm-hmm. And, like, basically, what did you guys need to do in order to even get to the U.S.?
So this is the craziest thing. Like, I'm going to jump it, like, forward, and then I'll jump back and tell you the whole story. But, like, a couple years ago, I was asked to donate to some event that was happening at UCLA. Some, you know, guy was going to come speak, and one of the Jewish organizations had, you know, arranged for him to come speak. So I go to this thing. I had no idea who this guy was. I just donated. It was like, you know, they give you food and some wine. And I was like, okay, cool, let's go. So I take my husband with me. We're sitting there, and this guy had written a book that of this information that had just become declassified. And he actually, I don't know if you guys know, but Roosevelt actually turned away ships full of Jews during World War II and said, basically, you can't come to the United States. And when they went back, they were all killed. So this guy that was speaking, he was older, and he had actually been, he'd heard of this, and he said, you know what, if there's ever a time in my life where I could save people, I'm going to take that chance. So he actually worked in the Carter administration, and Carter, this was during the whole hostage situation, so Carter basically gave an executive order to get all Persians out of the U.S. and not allow any Persians to come in. So this guy who was speaking basically was like, okay, I know that if we send these Persians back, they're all going to get killed because they either worked for, you know, they were kids of the Shah, people who worked for the Shah, or they were Jews, or they were Baha'i.
Yeah. And so the reason if you send the Persians back to Iran, they would get killed is because back then, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, since I'm not fully educated about this, was because if any Persians were Christian or Jewish and they didn't convert to the Muslim religion, they would get killed for that.
It was actually like, that's one thing, but this was during the whole like coup around, you know, 1979, where the Shah was overthrown and Khomeini came and took over. A lot of people who worked for the Shah were killed, whether they were Muslim or not. Like, if they were in the Shah's army or if they were a general in the army, they would get killed.
Okay.
So basically, this guy who worked for Carter was like, I know these people, if they get sent back, they were all like sons of people who worked for the Shah, or they were Baha'i or whatever. So it was like high risk to their lives. So he basically told them to file asylum applications and then hid the asylum applications in a closet so that nobody would review the asylum applications. Because once you apply for something, unless a declaration has been made on the application, they can't deport you.
Right.
So he basically hid the applications, and he didn't just do that. He worked with a company, a nonprofit called Hayas, who actually helped get more Persian Jews and, you know, people that were persecuting Iran into the U.S. So there's an executive order to get rid of all the Persians in the U.S., and this guy actually not only kept people from being deported, but actually got more people out of Iran into the U.S. And, and that's how my family got out, through the work of Hayas. So I'm literally sitting in this conference, like, staring at this guy who was responsible for saving my family, knowing that actually happened. So basically what happened is, you know, my dad worked at the Shah's Heart Hospital. He was actually the head of the Shah's Heart Hospital. And he had saved the eyesight of one of the techs that worked in his lab. My dad's a pathologist. He looks under microscopes. And the tech, he had diagnosed him with some parasite and saved his eyesight. And the tech actually worked for Khomeini. Like, he was one of the, like, undercover people.
What does Khomeini mean?
Khomeini is the person who took power after the Shah. Okay. Basically did the coup. So he comes to my dad and he basically says, you saved my life, basically, because you saved my eyesight. I'm going to save your life. You're on the list. They're going to kill you. Get out. So 2 days later, my dad leaves Iran, goes to Vienna, but leaves my mom, my sister, and my passport with the government, saying, I'm going to a medical conference, but, you know, my family's here and they can't leave because you have their passport. So they let him, my dad, go. After a couple months, I would say like 6 to 8 weeks, we hired smugglers to put us in the back of a truck. We went to the bazaar, like where you would buy food, like outdoor, you know, supermarket. And they put us in the back of a truck, threw corn on top of us, and smuggled us across the border of Iran and Pakistan. And I remember that right when we got across the border, we had like a pit stop to go pee. It was like a clay hut with a hole in the ground.
How old were you?
I was 6 and a half. My sister was 13. Wow. And it was basically my mom doing this with her two daughters. Yikes. And some smugglers. And so it was like this hole in the ground. I was too small to like straddle the hole to pee. So my mom was like holding me above this big fat hole in the ground. If she dropped me, I'd like fall into a pile of poo and pee. And she told me we're going to America. She didn't tell me that before because, you know, I was young and I'd probably tell someone and that would have been good. So she tells me that there. And I was like, the first thing I thought, we used to get like bootleg Michael Jackson videos. And I was like, I'm going to meet Michael Jackson. That was so like the funny one. That's what I said when she told me. So
we did you? I'm kidding.
Actually, when I first went to a Michael Jackson concert, I was like, oh my God, this is so crazy. But anyway, so we spent a night in the desert, and then we went to Pakistan. We stayed there from, I think it was like 3 months waiting for visas. And then we finally reunited with my dad in Vienna, and then we flew to New York, and then we came to LA where we settled down.
Which is so common, actually, with a lot of my Persian friends who all have asylum. What is it called?
Yeah, asylum.
Oh, okay. I have an asylum. A lot of them, like I have two of my best friends. They lived in Italy for 3 years before they got to America because you weren't allowed to go from Iran straight to the US. So you had to stop, do a pit stop for a couple of months to a year, whatever.
A lot of people did Turkey. My husband's family did Turkey. Some people did Israel.
Okay.
A lot of the people who were Muslim and worked for the Shah did Germany.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. So that's why a lot of them, their stories are they lived in like two other countries before they finally got to be in the US. And that's a cool story. I mean, she was telling me the story when I was doing my lift. So like I was like almost in tears. Well, I couldn't move my face. But it's that's a crazy story. Like I can't imagine going to this conference and watching this person speak and you're like, oh my God, you saved my life.
Yeah, you saved my entire family's
life. Did you tell him?
Yeah, we went up to him afterwards and we told him and we took pictures with him and...
That's amazing. Yeah. I wanted to introduce our next sponsor, which is BetterHelp Online Counseling. They're one of my favorite sponsors, and I really hope that every single one of my listeners reaches out and uses them because they're actually amazing. So if you think that you may be depressed or you're feeling overwhelmed or anxious, BetterHelp offers licensed online counselors who are trained to listen and help you. All you have to do is talk with your counselor in a private online environment at your convenience. BetterHelp counselors have expertise in a broad range of areas, including anxiety, grief, depression, relationship conflicts, difficulty sleeping, LGBT matters, trauma, anger, family conflict, self-esteem, and so much more. They give you access to help that may not be available in your area, especially if you don't want to stress out your friends or your family, you just feel like people don't get you. BetterHelp Online Counseling gets you. All you have to do is fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs and then get matched with your counselor in under 48 hours. It's easily scheduled, secure video or phone sessions with your therapist, plus exchange unlimited messages. Best of all, it's confidential, and if for whatever reason you're not happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time and no additional charge. In fact, so many people are using BetterHelp right now that they're currently even recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. BetterHelp is an affordable option, and our listeners can get 10% off of your first month with using my discount code, TOOTIRED. That's TOOTIRED. So get started today at betterhelp.com/TOOTIRED. Talk to a therapist online today and get the help that you need because it's time to put your mental and emotional health first, okay? So trust me, I really hope all my listeners check out BetterHelp Online Counseling. It's one of my favorite services and I also use them. So good luck and enjoy. That's why it's like a lot of these families, including my own family, like you have gone through so much racism growing up. And then you're like, okay, you're going to cry.
No, I'm not going to cry. It's just like, it's so true.
But, and then you're like, your parents, they bring you to the US and you're like, okay, this is where the racism ends and you finally live safe. And then you come to the US. And suddenly, even with recently, when you start to understand again, like, oh shit, racism is not over just because I'm in America. And that's one thing that I want to talk about because I've noticed that, you know, with everything that's been happening with Black Lives Matter, and I feel like there's been some amazing movements and a lot of things have been changing. And I feel like recently what I've started to notice, and I feel like you were kind of part of it too, which again, I don't want to take away from any other movements because of course, like Black Lives Matter, no lives are going to matter until Black Lives Matter, and completely agree with that. But unfortunately, it seems that whenever these movements happen, there's a weird scapegoat when it comes against Jewish people. And it seems that people care so much about anti-racism, anti-hate, but not about anti-Semitism, because it doesn't count, maybe because they think we're white, even though look at you and I right now. My dad's brown, you're brown, I'm white looking, my mom's white looking. So there's Black Jews, there's Mexican Jews, there's Jewish people all over the world, and we're still only 2%.
It's not even 2%, it's 0.2%.
I'm sorry, we're 0.2%
of the world population is Jewish.
So what are your thoughts right now when you, because my mom was like, when I started to notice a lot of anti-Semitism recently, my mom was just like really sad, because she was like, wow, we had to escape Russia during communism, because they were literally threats that they were wanted to kill my family, and they wanted to kill her daughters who were so young. And my mom was like, why would anyone want to kill my children just because they're Jewish? They're babies. Like they haven't done anything. And it's like, and then we moved to Russia, and in Russia, there was always weird things between Israelis and Russia. And we moved to Israel, I mean. Mm-hmm. And in Israel, sometimes as much as they accepted us, sometimes there was like a whole jokes between Russians and Israelis. Mm-hmm. Like they looked down at Russians or whatever back then. I mean, things have changed since. And then, so then finally, like, okay, we're going to give our daughters a better future. We're going to move to America because mm-hmm. we won the green card lottery. Move to the U.S. And it's, I mean, I have, of course, I've come across like racism with being Jewish. It's not a first. But recently, I almost felt overwhelmed with everything that was happening. And my mom was so sad because she was just like, wow.
Like we risked everything to come here.
Yeah.
And it's following us here too.
And now it's happening here.
I would say the Persian Jewish community is very frustrated as well, because we literally, like when we were escaping through the desert, we were shot at. I've been spit on as a child for being Jewish. I felt like we left that country, and my parents left the country. They didn't even speak good English. Came here, started a whole new life, left their comfortable life. And now it's like rearing its ugly head. What I just don't understand is that how could you say don't be racist, but then be anti-Semitic? Like you don't get to choose your bigotry. You're either not a bigot or you are a bigot. So that's the part that frustrates me the most. How could you claim that, you know, you have been oppressed and you have been this and you have been, but then go ahead and oppress other people?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you can't solve racism with more racism.
Right.
That's what doesn't make sense. And I think the problem is that a lot of people view being Jewish is either a religion, or they're not educated enough, or sometimes they're like, get over the Holocaust already, blah, blah. It's like, first of all, we do our best to not bring up the Holocaust because we know it annoys people. Holocaust was also only 60, 70 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Which people don't understand.
And also, a lot of people's families were wiped out. So how could you say don't bring up the Holocaust, where people literally, you guys, are still so traumatized? Like my entire family, even in Iran, we had to hide the fact that we were Jewish because it was so bad for Jews. And now, like, we're in America, right? And it was Hanukkah, and I wanted to put a menorah on our gate. My husband's like, don't do that. Like, they're going to do something to us.
Yeah, her husband, he is so traumatized from that. And just like my father, I wanted to have, when I lived in an apartment in West Hollywood, I wanted to put a mezuzah outside my door. Mm-hmm. My father is so scared because of my father, who's brown looking and Jewish. He had a very tough upbringing in Russia during communism, way more tough than my mother, who looks like me, who's blonde, white, with blue eyes.
Right.
And he's so traumatized. He was like, do not put a mezuzah. Like, you don't want. And I was like, Dad, like, this is a gay community. Like, what do you think? They're going to, like, beat me up or something? They're so nice here. And he's like, no, they hate the Jews. Do not put it. And he's so traumatized. When I started daddy issues, I had to legally change my last name that was Jewish out of my dad's request, because he's so traumatized that he thought people would come after me for being a Jew. Yeah. And that's just like, that's what people don't get.
Simple things like wearing a Star of David or wearing a kippah, and you can get beat up on the street for that. And it's happening. Like, look at all the shootings in synagogues and stuff. And, you know, I just don't understand how 0.2% of the population is getting so much hate. And I guess it's easier to just scapegoat 0.2%. The other thing too, and then I was thinking about this, is we've sort of been traumatized and silent on social media about being Jewish. And so we don't like defend ourselves, because we're just like, if I hide, nobody's going to hurt me.
They'll leave us alone.
They'll leave us alone. But I think like it's kind of backfired in the sense that we didn't stand up for ourselves.
And now recently, if people have started to stand up for themselves.
I for sure did. Too. Like every Friday I do a Shabbat Shalom post. Oh. And I want people to know that I'm Jewish. Because what I realized on social media is a lot of people have never met a Jew. I actually had somebody send me an article that said that Jews put human meat in their hamburgers. Like people.
Wait, that's not how you eat your burger?
What? Like literally, I was like, I literally responded and I was like, please tell me you don't actually believe that. But people do believe that, because we've been so scared to be vocal about our Judaism on social media that they're going to believe what is out there.
People have told me, I actually come across that. Somebody said in a holiday, I forget which holiday we celebrate, Passover or whatever it was, that we sacrifice a human. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, that's why I'm inviting you to my house. But like I used to do when I was younger, whenever I met people who just were unaware, ignorant in a way, I would always invite them to stay in my house whenever they're in town. My parents would be so annoyed because they're like, why are you bringing a stranger to our house every time to educate them?
Right.
It's not your job. And I was like, why not? They can see it's very normal. I've even had a girl from Spain, and Spain is one of the most anti-Semitic countries, mm-hmm. and she just didn't know any better. I was like, what are your thoughts on Jews? And she was just like, well, one time this guy from Dubai like practically tried to rape me, and after that I was like, ew, I fucking hate Jews. And I was like, well, first of all, you need to learn more about the Middle East, because I don't think you understand what somebody from Dubai is versus from a different country. Like, she doesn't even know the Middle East, period.
No, but I think that a little bit of the blame falls on us for being scared, leaving a vacuum on social media to be filled by ignorance and hateful speech and all of that stuff. I think it's our responsibility as people who do have a large voice and a large influence on social media to be more vocal about our Judaism and show people, like, I'm Jewish and I'm helping people. I'm Jewish and I'm doing good.
But I think the problem is that people also don't understand the difference between people get confused about, is being Jewish a religion? Because then you're just white. So then why? It's like, it's this me being hating on Christians, or is being Jewish a race? Like, so personally to me, being Jewish to me is a race. And when I'm also Ashkenazi Jew, which is different Jewish than she is, which is a Sephardic Jew.
But there's also Ethiopian Jews who are completely black.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting to actually hear their voices a little bit about the anti-Semitism.
I mean, I can't even imagine when you're a black Jew, not only do you already go through so much pain and hardship for being black, then it's like, oh, you're also Jewish? Okay, double whammy. Like, it's, you know, I can't even imagine. So I feel like for me, being Jewish is a race. And normally I never used to say anything. But then when I started to see anti-Semitism happening, when we're already so trying to be so outspoken about anti-hate and anti-racism, that's when it was the first time I actually spoke up. And some people were like, wait, you're Jewish?
Yeah.
And I'm like, they're like, half? And I'm like, no. I'm like full on Jew.
Yeah.
Like I recently took a DNA test, 23andMe, mm-hmm. which is just your spit. And it came back, and it just shows you how much being Jewish is actually in your blood. It came back. And usually the test would be different for me and for her mm-hmm. because of the type of Jewish we are. Mm-hmm. But for me, it came back as 99.6% Jewish, as Jew. Mm-hmm. And then 0.4% other. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get white. I didn't get Russian. I didn't get American. I didn't get Israeli. None of that. It didn't count because of how much Jewish is in my blood, which also means Ashkenazi Jews. It means that my ancestors were probably cousins and they were fucking, and that's how I'm able to have so much Jewish in my blood. Mm-hmm. But it just shows you the difference between how some people can view it. Because so that's why to me it's a race, because it's literally my blood. And I'm also a Kohen. Mm-hmm. And they say that if you're a Kohen, that's another specific thing in your blood. Mm-hmm. So that's another way you can test my blood to see if I'm like an extra Jew, which is a Kohen.
Yeah.
And Ashkenazi Jews, because I think our ancestors were fucking each other, we also have more, that's how you know it's a race and it's not a religion, because there's actual diseases that only Ashkenazi Jews carry, mm-hmm. that if I marry another Ashkenazi Jew, we both have to get tested for those specific diseases in order for our kids to not have those.
Right.
So how can you say it's a religion?
Well, I think people can also convert to Judaism,
yeah.
in which case it is a religion. So I kind of think it's both. But what's really interesting is this was like 10, 12 years ago. I'll never forget it. It was on NPR. Every day I would drive in when I was in residency to USC. It was like a 20-minute drive. I'd listen to NPR. And there was two KKK members
awesome.
That actually got married, had children, and their child had Tay-Sachs, which is an Ashkenazi Jewish disease. And they found out that their ancestors were from Germany, Jewish, came here, like many people that were victims of the Holocaust, denied their Judaism because it was dangerous to be Jewish and they didn't want to die. And they actually raised their kids without ever telling them that they were Jewish, because, and this is very, very common, by the way. So these two kids, you know, grow up, join the KKK, get married, have a kid with Tay-Sachs, do the genetic testing, find out they're both Ashkenazi Jews, and then they totally turn their lives around and dedicated the rest of their lives to helping other people in the KKK get out.
Oh, get out. Okay. That's so funny. So they ended up finding out they actually hated themselves this whole time.
Isn't this crazy? It was so ironic. I'll never forget it. I was like, ugh. It was one of those ones that you like sit in your car, even though you've arrived at your destination, because you just want to hear the rest of it.
I mean, my stories of racism against being Jewish are completely different than my parents' stories. I mean, well, first of all, I don't know if I've talked about this before, but like, for example, my father, not only was he constantly teased about it by the teachers, because basically in Russia back then, they hated Jews and blacks the most. And don't even get me started being gay. Like, there wasn't you're not gay if you're Russian. Like, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So
they just say Iran. Actually, they made a statement like that.
Exactly. It just doesn't exist. So, but like in the books in Russia back then, it used to be where there were slurs for black people and for Jews, and they didn't take them out. So it just stays there. So then one time there was my father used to have a different name, which he legally changed because it was too Jewish. So I won't say the name to respect him, but like it was a very Jewish name. And for whatever reason, the book, the name was there. And then it said like the scum Jew or like a kike, but like a worse word for
a
Jew.
Right.
And then they're like, okay, why don't you read it to my dad? And my dad was like, I'm not going to read it. But that's what teachers would do. Or like the fact that if you were, and they use the N word for black people in the books too. Mm-hmm. And they would have the black people then read it. And it got to the point that also if you were a Jew in Russia, you have to pay extra money to order to get into college. And when you graduate, you also have to pay extra if you're a Jew. And when my dad was doing applications to go to university, first of all, most of them wouldn't accept him because he was Jewish. But other people, the interviews were really forward. They were just like, okay, but like, you're a Jew. Like, why would we accept you? Like, I don't get it. And luckily, my dad still overcame all that. And not to mention, his father, not only was he an alcoholic and was cheating on his mother the whole time and spent all their money on alcohol, his dad still served in the army before that. And even though he served for his country, mm-hmm. the way they treated a Jew was so terrible that not only did he lose his business because of that, he had to go to jail for being a Jew that owned a business, because you weren't allowed to own a business as a Jewish person. Then in jail on his last day, when my dad's father was supposed to be released, my dad was like 17, 18, his dad got beat up to death by the guards for being a Jew. And they turned him into a vegetable, and then he died. So, and that was like my father's upbringing. And by the way, my dad's dad was white with blue eyes, with blonde hair. So it just shows you sometimes it doesn't matter. So, and my father was so used to this. I mean,
that's why he's so traumatized.
My father is insane. My mom's stories is more like she dated a guy for a long time. And then one day he found out she was Jewish and he came up to her and he was like, okay, Allah, you're not a kike, right? And she was like, excuse me? And he goes, I mean, I would never date a kike. Like, tell him, be honest with me. You're like, why wouldn't you tell me that you're a fucking kike? Like, be honest. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I didn't realize that me being Jewish would upset you so much. And he goes, well, I would never date one. And I was like, that's the kind of things that my mom had to get used to. But my mom also passed as mm-hmm. Russian lady. Mm-hmm. But like, so my dad's stories are endless of like the fear. And that's why until this day my dad always swore to never go back to Russia, because I can't even explain how terrible the treatment for him was. My mom's obviously more lenient, but mm-hmm. I forgot even the point of this was that I was getting into these stories, but I'm just trying to show an example of really what it is for some people to go through being Jewish, regardless if I'm white skinned in the US, and maybe my stories of some guys not wanting to date me because I'm a Jew, or sometimes people hate on me on social media and they call me a kike. Mm-hmm. It's not even comparable to my family stories, but I wish people would have the same care and treatment and love that they do with other cultures mm-hmm. for us as well.
Yeah. I don't even honestly know like how it started. I literally, you know, as a culture, like we just said, we just want to be left alone. And like, we're generally very quiet about our Judaism. We don't try to like get people to be Jewish. We don't try to like push it into people's faces. So I just, you know, don't understand where all the hate kind of originated from.
I think it's because they say the Jewish people own the media or they control everything. And guys, if that was true, wouldn't I be more famous and richer right now? Like, come on. Why do I have to keep working really hard?
I just think like for Jews also, like what I was talking about before a little bit, is that education is like so paramount. It's like there's this joke that like, you know, there's these two moms sitting in the audience and one of their kids is being sworn in as the president of the United States, and the other mom will lean over and be like, yeah, but my son's a doctor. I mean, like, you know, so I just think education's so paramount, and it's like the one thing that you're expected to do that you're going to achieve. When it's that, you know, ingrained in your head from childhood,
yeah,
you're going to achieve.
So I think that's why people sometimes think that they have more, or like, who cares about them, because we tend to be pretty educated, or we just have
to. It's just like, you know, it's like family values and education are like the two things that are driven in your head, because no one can take that away from you.
Because they have taken everything else.
Like in Iran, we had, you know, my dad was a physician. He worked very hard. He came from nothing. Literally, his mom had to sell their forks and knives in order for him to be able to afford bus fare to get to school. So he literally came from nothing, built himself a life in Iran. And then one day, these soldiers knocked on our door and said, your house is ours. Move. You have 24 hours to get out. So I feel like when so much is able to be taken away from you, family and education are two things that no one can ever take away from you, kind of. I think that's sort of why it's so ingrained in our culture.
And I don't know how much of this fully is going to stay in the podcast, but this one thing I want to clarify for people. The only reason you've learned about the Holocaust is because it's part of the World War II, and because America wants to look like a savior. America didn't actually save us at first, because we had ships coming to America with a lot of Jews in there, and America, the U.S. turned down all the ships with the Jews coming, and those Jewish people died on the ships or died when they went back. So the U.S. finally in the end intervened because they had no choice. And that's the only reason in your history books do you learn about the Holocaust. You don't actually know the full-on stories. You guys are not even educated about the fact that Hitler not only killed my family during the Holocaust, Hitler also attacked St. Petersburg. And he killed my family who lived in St. Petersburg before the Holocaust. My grandma survived. My grandma survived when he attacked St. Petersburg, only to then go through the Holocaust. Like, it's so crazy.
Oh my God. I have to actually, like, educate myself more on the Holocaust, too, because that is a Sephardic Jew. I mean, we were in Iran. It didn't make it to that area. I mean, I'll tell you, like, I can't even almost read about the Holocaust, and I can't watch movies about the Holocaust because it's that disturbing to me.
Yeah.
So I actually am probably not as educated as you are.
Right, because that's another thing people don't realize, the different type of Jewish stuff. But people also don't realize we didn't only go through the Holocaust and then Hitler also coming to St. Petersburg. We also had 40 years in Egypt as slaves. The Jewish people, but you know, again, it's not just Jewish people. We need to educate ourselves on the Armenian genocide, apartheid in Africa that was happening in the 90s. It's hard though, because we literally are not able to educate ourselves on every single thing that happens all over the world. I get that. But it's important to just be a little more open-minded and sensitive to other people's trauma. And it's not about, this isn't an oppression Olympic. Mm-hmm.
No, it's not. That's the other thing that drives me nuts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just be understanding and be open. And I do like that. So I think, A, people sometimes did not care as much about the Jewish stuff because we didn't speak up. And also because they weren't sure, like, oh, well, they're white. So, but now maybe you can see that, A, not all of us are white. And B, our families have still gone through stuff, because also during the Holocaust with Hitler, the reason we were prosecuted is because we weren't considered white. Being Jewish to them was a Jew, and it's in your blood, and it's a waste, and you need to die. If we were considered white, we would have just then fit in with the Germans. We didn't.
Yeah, like my mom, I have two grandparents that were blonde hair, blue eyes.
That's crazy.
And they were cousins.
Oh, of course. Were they Ashkenazi? I hope I don't end up with an Ashkenazi Jew.
I hope you do.
I want to end up with a Sephardic Jew, or like, actually, Sephardic's, I don't matter.
You'd have cute kids.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it doesn't fully matter, as long as someone it doesn't matter to me if I end up with a Jewish person or not, just as long as they respect my religion and my culture and what it means to me. But I feel like I'm happy that like people like you, people like me, we've spoken up a little more. Of course, again, I don't want us to take away from everything else that's happening in the world, but I think it is sometimes important to show that I lost some friends when I started to tweet about anti-Semitism, and I spoke up. I didn't expect any of my friends to care or to even retweet it. Like, I understood it's not their fight, but like I had some friends who made jokes about it, and like for me it was just like, this is when it's not funny and not okay anymore.
I actually, if you're anti-Semitic and you unfollow me, please unfollow me if you're anti-Semitic.
This is my thought process of some of my friends who were made jokes about the anti-Semitism or made fun of me because I'm white, so how can I know any oppression? My family know any oppression? Was that if you walked for BLM, for Black Lives Matter, and you're so pro that movement, you completely miss the message of it if you are still going to be racist against other cultures. Because the whole point was that you should see color and you should start to see that there are differences between us. So if you're aware of the color when there's a black person in front of you, so they're not getting as much as, you know, the police brutality and all that, then it's okay if you also see color and you're like, oh, my friend is in, like, his family is going through the ICE stuff. Oh yeah, I see color because they're from Mexico. Mm-hmm. So just the same way, then you should see color and you should see race when it comes with someone Jewish. So if you completely ignore that, then you also ignore the whole message behind BLM, which is anti-racism, anti-hate.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to be anti-hate, you can't hate a certain group of people.
Yeah, you can be like, I'm anti-hate, but just not, but like, it doesn't count against Jews.
But we hate Jews, they don't count.
Yeah, they don't count because it's a religion. It's not a religion to everyone. And we literally got killed a million times for that. So if it was a religion, I doubt, then hopefully people would have left us alone. I don't know. It is that. So do you have anything else to add?
I just want to thank Violet for using her platform to talk about Judaism. I'm trying to use my platform also to just, you know, say that I'm Jewish. I'm not like pushing it down people's throats, but I just want to be an example of a Jew doing good in the world so that people, even if I'm the only Jew they've ever met, they see that it's actually like a good example and a role model.
Yeah. And we're so inclusive too. Like in general, I love believing in God. And I know you love to believe in God too. We had a spiritual conversation like before we started the podcast. And I mean, I listen to videos and podcasts of pastors, mm-hmm. Christian pastors, mm-hmm. when they preach about God and about Jesus, even though we don't have Jesus in our religion, they preach about Jesus and they just talk about how to like believe in something. And sometimes it brings me to tears because it's just the thought of like just believing in something and being pure and good person. I love all that. So for me,
it's very humbling. I think when you believe in a greater God and you believe in a greater purpose, I think with all of the stuff that we think is so significant and sometimes we think we're so significant, I think it's just, it's kind of like my meditation.
Yeah.
It's the, like when I go to temple, it's the only time I can shut my brain off. I'm always thinking like a million miles per hour about achieving this and doing that and that goal. But when I go there, it just makes me feel a little less significant.
That's good.
And humbles me.
I mean, like even last night, I randomly felt like praying and I just prayed to God. And my God is everyone's God, by the way. It's not like to Jewish God. It's just mm-hmm. everyone's God. And I just prayed to God and I thanked him for everything that's happening in my life, including all the hardships I went through. Because I was just like, I have a feeling that you have me go through a lot of tough things this year because I'm meant for something greater. And I see it now. Like, I'm so thankful. So I think it's important in general, regardless what you believe in, to just think there's something else out there, to say a good prayer, to be nice to people, mm-hmm. Don't be racist. If you are racist, that's okay. Just educate yourself. You know, you don't have to be ignorant. There's no reason for you to carry so much hate in your heart for one culture, for one specific person. It's so heavy. And if you just release that heaviness, you will feel so much lighter and better things will come into your life. Trust me.
Couldn't have said it better than that.
Okay. Anyway, where can people find you?
Wow, I'm like everywhere.
On the street.
Mainly on Instagram, Dr. Sheila Nazarian, and on my link tree, you know, the bio, the link in bio, you could see all the other places you could find me.
So you guys can Google Dr. Sheila Nazarian, but then also your website is
nazarianplasticsurgery.com.
And then you can also, don't forget to check out Netflix.
My Netflix show, Skin Decision, is awesome. Just have a box of tissues. I told Violet the same thing.
No, she was right. And then don't forget to, if you have any questions for her, make sure to DM her. I'm sure she'll answer.
Yeah.
Check out all the videos. Everything is pretty honest and open there. Mm-hmm. Whether you want to talk to her about Judaism or you want to talk to her about what kind of work you want to get done, if you're scared, it's like literally all there. And it's really out there. So check out her Instagram. So thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me and having these tough conversations.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm scared to talk about some of these things. Like, I don't want to get hate. I don't want people to get upset with me. It's always scary to talk about religion in general. And religion politics is a topic I try to steer clear from.
Right.
But I hope in some ways that I'm able to educate the listeners who are listening. And I hope that you know, you can accept me just the way I would want to accept you.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, you heard some things that are just new to you. And maybe it'll prompt them to research a little bit more and to read a little bit more and to just be a little bit more accepting. And
yeah. Anyway, guys, thank you guys so much for listening. And I'll see you again next Thursday on Too Tired to Be Crazy. Love you guys. Bye.
Bye.